everyone, and welcome to episode 111 of the Medieval Podcast. I'm Danielle Sobalski, also known as the 5-Minute Medievalist. This week, Peter Konieczny from Medievalist.net and I decided to hop on a friend's bandwagon and imagine what it would be like to actually speak with people from the medieval past. The result is, as you're about to hear, mostly just two friends geeking out on a Friday night, so this definitely isn't one of my more serious podcasts. But sometimes it's good to just play around with the medieval period and remember that we came to it because of the fun stuff. So without further ado, here's Peter and me sketching out a guest list for a medieval dinner party. Well, thank you, Peter, for joining me to talk about a medieval dinner party. We got this idea in part from our friend Anthony Caldelis' Byzantium and Friends podcast. We need a podcast for this week. We've got a whole bunch of interviews lined up for the next few weeks, but for this week, we needed something. And Anthony Caldelis did an episode on who you would meet if you could bring somebody back, like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yes, and he had two guests, and they all like, this is who we interview. And some of them are almost interrogations of the people.
Yeah, we thought we would do a dinner party because I thought that might be interesting when you have all these characters together from different moments in history. It could That's be really right. fun.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Yeah, we want to bring in the people we enjoy hanging out with.
Yeah, I had a whole bunch of people that I was thinking of as potentials, but I don't think they would be very fun. Like when you're talking about being an interrogation, like I've just written this book on monks, so I think it would be cool to talk to St. Benedict and be like, what are your ideas about this? But I don't think I'd want to invite him to dinner. I think you'd be really boring and judgmental.
Yeah. No, I had the same kind of thing. Oh, or Derek Vitalis, the 12th century Norman, you know, chronicler. Like, oh, he'd be fun to talk with. But no, I don't think he would enjoy the party too much.
So. No, probably wouldn't be a good party. Although monks would be really cool. But I don't think it would be a good party. So we haven't actually sketched out our parameters. Let's imagine that we are all vaccinated and our historical friends are vaccinated and we're going out to a restaurant and we're bringing these people with us. So we've each decided to bring three people and I'm still narrowing this down as we talk.
Oh, wow. All right.
Okay, Peter, so you go first. Who is the first person that you'd invite to our medieval dinner party?
Okay. And I almost invite this person to be the host of the dinner party because I think they would. And that is Lucrezia Borgia.
Oh my gosh, you're inviting her to a dinner party? She's going to poison us.
Oh, yeah, there is that chance. But.
Okay, tell us who Lucrezia Borgia is.
So she's born around 1480. She's a Spanish-Italian, and she's a daughter of Pope Alexander VI. Yes. Basically, this is the Borgia Pope. Very famous, very infamous, and she is one of the children that he made legitimate. he has a few others, but yeah, she is this kind of fascinating, sometimes called the femme fatale kind of person, but she kind of grows up in the Borgia household, grows up in Rome, and then is very much involved in the politics of the papacy, of Italy, and is involved in a lot of stuff. She's very bright, very cunning would be the word, especially in his early days. She's known for once holding papal court in place of her father, you know, which I'm sure all the other bishops would have really liked.
Yeah, I would think so. Now, is Lucrezia the one who told everyone she wasn't pregnant when she was obviously pregnant? Is that the right one?
Yeah. There's one of the stories involves her after her first marriage ends. Yeah, she's pregnant and there's a child delivered. Pope Alexander issues two bulls, one saying that it's Cesare's son, the other saying that it's his son. So it's both Cesare's and his, not Lucrezia's. So she has three husbands and many lovers.
Mm-hmm.
So she obviously lived the good life.
So you're inviting her because she's a party girl or because you want to find out more about Italian politics?
Well, I think she'd probably be able to throw a really good party.
As long as we all come out of it alive.
They, But if you want someone like from the that kind of represents the Renaissance culture, she was a real patron of like poets and music and things like that, and would have a lot of great ways of just showcasing the Renaissance life.
I think she would be a good time for sure, but I would be watching my drink very carefully. Right. Okay. So my first guest is not going to be a surprise to anyone who knows me or listens to this podcast. And that is Christine de Pizan, because I just love her. She's so interesting as a person. So Christine is born, she's born in Italy, but she's mostly spent her life in France in the late 14th century. Her dad was a court physician and she lived a good life there. She married a guy from the court named Etienne, and then he died and her father died and she totally lost a lot of her standing. She was in debt. She had to try and get her money back from all these people. And she had to take care of her mother and her children. And she did it by writing, which was just unheard of. But she was so talented that she wrote a biography of the previous king. And she wrote books of advice. She wrote the Book of the City of Ladies, which is probably my favorite, where she talks about how ladies are amazing. Look at all these examples. And Christine just lived through such an amazingly turbulent and interesting time. Like, this is the Hundred Years' War. Like, the last thing she wrote about was Joan of Arc. So, like, this is a cool time to be alive. And not only that, but she made a career for herself in a job that nobody was doing, writing for a living. That was rare.
Indeed, indeed. And writing very well, too. Like, her works become really popular in the 15th century. Like, you know, they're printing them in English, like in Middle English, for instance. But she's also like, she's really involved in the French court too. Mm-hmm. She's got insider information.
Yeah. See, Peter's all about politics and I'm all about, like, tell us how you did it. How did you live like this? I think that Christine and Lucretia would not get along at all. We might have to sit them at opposite sides of the table.
Aw, I kind of think they'd be like sisters in arms.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. So who do you have next on your list?
I'm now going from opulent Italy to the icy wastes of Iceland for Snorri Sturluson.
All right.
Born in 1178. He is Icelandic politician, law speaker, but I'm mostly inviting him because he's like a author, a writer, a story collector. I'm looking for my guy to tell stories, and I think Snorri knows them all. He's the author of Heimskringla, which is like the history of the Norwegian kings, the Prose Edda, which is Norse mythology, like it's our big source for Norse mythology, and maybe like one or two sagas, like Egil's saga that he wrote. So I think with Iceland, you know, that's a very oral culture, a place where people kind of tell stories. And I just kind of imagine that he'd be an awesome storyteller.
Yeah.
Talk throughout the night.
Don't let the name fool you. He wouldn't be a boring party guest. That's a Snorri joke. Sorry, Peter.
Oh.
But I mean, that would be good, except for you might be disappointed if he said, oh yeah, we just made up those parts of the song.
Oh, I hope not. He's also kind of like the upper tier of Icelandic society. So you can learn a bit of the politics too. Like he winds up getting killed, right? Assassinated. So yeah, he's got probably stories to tell about like what's going on in the here and now of Iceland. That would be interesting as well. He's my storyteller for the night.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I want to bring in someone that has touched English politics and somebody I think that would be really interesting. So interesting, he has his own biography, and that is William Marshall.
Ooh.
Yeah, from the 12th century. So William Marshall is a knight, super chivalrous dude in terms of all of those ideals of chivalry that we think of. And he served under four kings. So Henry II, Richard I, John, and Henry III. And so that dude saw a lot of action. He was in tournaments. There's one point where he says he was in a tournament and he was had five guys coming after him for ransom. And so not only was he involved in all of the court politics, like when John is fighting with the barons or Henry II is trying to impose law on England, but he's also been involved in warfare and all sorts of things. I think he would have amazing stories to tell over his very long life.
Yeah, he's a fascinating, like, he's one of those few people that we have of knight, warrior, where we have this really good account of his life. Great story of how he almost gets killed when he's like 5 years old.
Yeah. Tell the story.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So he's like 5 years old and his father has went into rebellion against King Stephen. Stephen winds up capturing his troops, capture William, bring him to the castle where they're besieging the dad. And Stephen said, well, we're going to kill your son in front of you. We're going to put him on a catapult and catapult him against this castle walls. And like father says, oh, go ahead. I can make more children.
Yeah.
And Stephen, like in the end, like can't do it. And there's this funny bit where a little 5 year old him is playing with King Stephen in a field, cutting like dandelions off. Oh, it must be the cutest thing.
Yeah. William is obviously spared, but what a story. What an epic story. And that's only the beginning of his life. So I think William Marshall would be an amazing party guest. He might be a bit boring, but I don't know. I think he will have so many different stories of his lifetime and all the things that he had to deal with, especially give him a couple glasses of wine and get him on to the topic of King John. And it could be really amazing.
When he's like in his 20s and 30s, and he's like a tournament. That's what he does. He goes with tournaments with Henry the Young King. And that must have been the life.
Yeah, seriously epic. So I would invite William Marshall to sit at the table with us.
Excellent choice.
Thank you. Who's your number three, your third choice?
Okay, this one, I'm going back all the way to the 9th century, the Middle East, Baghdad itself, for Al-Jihaz. I think I would call him like the most interesting man ever. Al-Jihaz means the bug-eyed.
The bug-eyed.
So, yeah. And he got that nickname for the caliph's children because they were so scared when they looked at him.
Wow.
That they wouldn't want to be taught by him. So they couldn't get that job as like court tutor. So he kind of grows up in Basra. He comes from a poor family. And his family origins may be from North Africa, Northeast Africa, Abyssinia, as they call it. But he gets this love of learning and he starts becoming a writer, first in Basra. And as he makes a little money, he goes off to Baghdad and seeks his fame and fortune. And he winds up writing like 200 books, about 30 of which survived. And they are the most fascinating and different kind of stuff that you can have, right? Like he seems to write about everything. He's kind of a guy that writes satire about misers and penny pinchers in one way. He writes, is it better to be right-handed or left-handed? To me, he's a guy that talks about issues that he finds interesting and he takes a look at society and says, like, you know, what are we missing out? How do we kind of figure out things? He's always seems to be a guy that's always questioning. He deals with issues like race relations, animals. He's kind of a proto-evolutionist. His main work is called The Book of Animals. That's where he looks at things from like the mosquito to the human being and tries to understand how they work and stuff like that. I find him a really kind of, in my own heart, he's this book lover, right? I've got a really great quote from his Book of Animals talking about books. He says, I know no companion more prompt to hand, more rewarding, more helpful, or less burdensome, and no tree that lives longer, bears more abundantly, or yields more delicious fruit that is handier, easier to pick, or more perfectly ripened at all times of the year than a book.
People might not realize that you're a trained librarian, which is probably why you have such a soft spot for that quote.
That's right. Also, he lives to his like 90s, I think. And guess how he dies?
How does he die, Peter?
He gets buried by a pile of books.
What?
Yes, he gets crushed by his own books.
That's not funny. I'm just really surprised. Wow.
I think that's a great way to go.
I mean, there are worse ways to go, I suppose.
That's right.
Than
that's
an
right.
avalanche of your favorite things.
Again, he's a guy at our party that he would question and make fun a bit, but add a nice different perspective that I think none of the other guests would have.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you're making me make a last minute change to the guest list because I was going to invite Avicenna, but I think that if we are only allowed to have so many people at the table, those two might have overlapping interests. And so let's throw someone else into the mix. So right. Plan B, let's invite Marco Polo. or whoever wrote his travels, in case it's still in debate that Marco Polo actually wrote the travels, let's invite Marco Polo or whoever wrote that book, because I think it would be really interesting to not only hear the stories of someone who traveled really, really far, but also to untangle what part of these stories are true and what part of the stories are not true. I will admit to not having read the travels cover to cover, but he has a whole lot of impossible stuff in it. Last week, we were talking about medieval Africa, and Africa is one of those places where in the Middle Ages, people were just like putting mysterious creatures there, you know, like creatures that have faces in their chest instead of having heads, or they have like one big foot and they use it as a sun umbrella, things like that. So Marco Polo has that kind of stuff in the travels, but he also actually made it to meet the Mongols and actually traveled really, really far. So I think it'd be interesting not only to get the stories of a merchant at this time, because he would have come across so many different cultures and actually seen so many different societies and buildings and architecture, but at the same time, you wouldn't be totally sure that everything he was telling you was completely true. And I think that would make for a very interesting dinner guest.
Indeed. Yeah, I really love it. That's a great choice. I always think of Marco Polo as like, here's this person that goes on an adventure, right? Because he's gone for like 20, 30 years. And he gets to meet all these wonderful characters, Kublai Khan. Mm-hmm. You know, he seems to, at least in his own version, like, you know, he's a high important guy. His nickname is like the millionaire because he's got like a million stories.
Yeah, I just think that would be interesting. So he is the person that on our guest list will have traveled the furthest. Yeah. And so he might have really interesting stories on a perspective that maybe we haven't had at the table so far. It would be interesting to see him speaking with the other guests, you know, when you have other storytellers like Snorri mm-hmm. at the table and skeptics. It might be a good time.
It would be interesting to see how he would say, hey, you know, what I know about your culture or what I know about yours, kind of comparison. And of course, he's got the money probably too. So,
yeah. And he might have some really great food recommendations as well.
Indeed.
We've got people, you know, from France. We've got people from the Middle East. We've got people who travel into the Far East. We could get lots of good food recommendations at this table, I think.
Yeah, we've got a nice cross culture. We'll assume that they all can understand each other.
Yes, the universal translator.
That's right. They would have to have interesting conversations. And I think they'd be asking lots of great questions with each other. So, yeah, I think it'd be a lot of fun.
That's what I was going to say. What kind of things do you think they would imagine about you? Because I'm thinking of if I show up at a dinner table with all these people from the Middle Ages, I'm going to have to cover my hair for one thing, because my hair is extremely short, which would signify me as being an adulteress or a nun. So there'd be some explaining to do. So there might be something, you know, some things that you need to explain about yourself and about this moment. So what kind of questions do you think your dinner guests would have about this century, this moment?
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, I'm so shy at parties that like, don't talk to me, but you know, like, I just sort of listen. But I think they would probably want to know, you know, simple things like, you know, what do I do for a living? What do people do for fun these days? What is interesting for you, right? Because, yeah, like I said, we've got storytellers, people that are inquisitive. Mm-hmm. I can see them asking, what's a fun thing for you to tell us about? Like, tell us a story. I think that's what they would say.
So what would you tell them? Oh, what is a fun thing that you do?
Oh, no, I don't know me. I know all about you. I know about the Middle Ages. So. I don't know. I'd probably bring out the video games. Here's Roblox. Here's Minecraft. Like we can do now.
Yeah. Thinking about it, I think it would be a big culture shock for two of my guests, for Christina and for William Marshall, because we would probably be inviting them, let's say, to Toronto, because that's closest to us. And we do have a queen as a figurehead here in Canada, but it's not nearly the same as the type of monarchy that they had back in the day. And Christine and William would have been at the top, like speaking to the people who are at the very top of society. It would be quite a culture shock, I think, for them to realize that we don't really put all that much stock in it. Similarly, I think Christine, she is very feminist in a lot of ways, but she's also extremely religious. And So I think that might be a shock for her as well, that people are not focused on religion in the same way that they were in the Middle Ages. I think that would be a big shock.
Oh yeah. I think, you know, they'd be wondering how you can coexist so easily with all these people of different faiths and nationalities. And because with them, it's like, this is something that's a challenge. Like Marco Polo probably has the one that has the most experience, you know, and for him, I'm on a once in a lifetime adventure, and it's a challenge. And, you know, I kind of only half understand people.
He would be one person who would be kind of used to the fact that people's cultures are going to be completely different. Probably wouldn't be all that shocked by that.
I think the only person that'd be really okay in like 21st century is Al-Jihaz. He's just so inquisitive and so open-minded and opinionated too. But, you know, I think he could come in across and just say, here are some fun things about your society that I think are just silly. But you have good things too, so let's put them together.
I actually think everybody would be able to adapt to society pretty well, except for William Marshall. It would be very hard for him to find a place in society, because everybody else around the table could find a place in current society. But where do you put a knight whose whole life is tournaments and warfare and, you know, advising kings?
Yeah,
that would be difficult. I think the others would adapt pretty well, though.
Indeed. Like, I think Lucretia could do well. She'd be all on social media.
Yes. She'd be an influencer for sure. Instagram all the way.
Yeah. I could see Snorri making movies.
Yeah.
And Marco Polo, like, I could see him. I'm the businessman of the future. I understand how different cultures work, although he doesn't really.
No. But I think he would have had to have been a really confident person, a person who could bluff his way through situations. And
exactly. He probably could read the room well. So.
Yes. Tell people what they wanted to hear. That would be definitely a skill, I think. And Christine could easily make a living, easily, because she's a great writer. She's got her opinions. And I think she understands people well enough that she could make a living as a writer now as well. She'd have to take a bit of a step back from some of her opinions because they are formed by that moment in time. But I think she would do well.
Indeed. I think she'd find her own like way of writing, and she's good at adding in her own opinions.
Yeah, and obviously adaptable when she can carve out a niche for herself when there was no niche that didn't exist at the time. So, yeah. Really interesting. Did you have anyone that you thought about inviting that you didn't?
Would I invite like kings and rulers and stuff like that? I think we were talking about like, would I invite Baybars, the Mamluk ruler? And they'd just be too angry and too, you know, they'd be good to like talk to. Like I said, if I want to interview a person, it might be Baybars or Machiavelli and stuff like that. But like, I don't think they'd be a good time.
You know, yeah.
Like, often I think the people that are with real power get tired from doing that, right? Like they have too much responsibility.
Oh, heavy is the head that wears the crown. That's not what I thought you were going to say, that they were tired from responsibility. I thought about many rulers and thought they would just be not very nice people in a lot of ways. They often come across as not being super nice. Interesting, but not good companionship, I think.
Yeah. Like, would Edward the First?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't really want to sit down and drink. I got like work to do. I'm not staying up late. Would you go the other way? Would you like invite a peasant?
Yeah, I thought about that, but I didn't think of anyone kind of by name. I thought about inviting Le Ménager de Paris, who's like the good man of Paris. He's not a peasant, but he had so many opinions of things and recipes and stuff in his back pocket and stuff that he wanted to teach his new, very young wife. So I thought about inviting him or his wife. They could be really interesting. And I also crossed a bunch of people off the list who we have had podcasts about, like Lucy de Thwang, who we had a podcast about with Bridget Wells Furby. Like, what an interesting life she had. Isabella of France, one of my favorite people in terms of interest, super interesting person. I think she would be one of those friends that would be good to have at a dinner party, but maybe be careful what you tell her. And I thought of having Joan of Arc, who obviously had a very amazing life, but I think she would be a boring dinner guest.
She might get really upset. God just told me to smite you all.
Yeah, she was an amazing, amazing person. And if people haven't read Helen Castor's biography of her, like, definitely read that one. There's a whole bunch of them, but that's my favorite. So you can see that she has a serious spirit in her during the trials. At least she wouldn't judge my hair. She would totally get that.
Very much so.
But yeah, I think she would be a little bit too serious to be a dinner guest. I thought about throwing a wild card in and saying, like, I'd invite the Gawain poet, the guy who wrote Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, because then we would know who he was. But that was probably a bit of a cheat.
I was wondering if it was just throwing in a musician or like a troubadour, right? Like, instead, like, yeah. I think of the entertainment. Snorri is my entertainment. I think we could use a nice flute or a tabor or whatever. And just entertain us, be that kind of part of the party. But would there be any literary figures that you'd invite? Grendel's mom?
Oh, are we talking about fictional characters?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yes, I would. Well, I'd invite Gawain, of course, King Arthur, and Robin Hood. Three of my favorite people, but they don't actually exist. Don't at me. There is no evidence that they exist. What about you? Would you invite Grendel's mother?
I'd invite Beowulf, I think. He seems like a chipper type guy.
I don't know about that. He seems a bit grumpy to me.
Some of these works from the Middle East have these kind of fun, like, trickster figures, right? They would be kind of really fun characters to kind of bring to life and tell these tales.
You keep inviting people who I would not want near my food. That's dangerous.
You know, like they say in one of them, yeah, maybe I told a whole bunch of lies and deceived you all, and I got a good meal out of it. But, you know, hey, you were entertained for the night. Why criticize me? I gave you what you wanted, a good party.
That is very much something that you'd appreciate. I could imagine you being like, oh, well, fair enough.
Of course. Oh, I forgot. Like, there's the Art of Party Crashing from the, like, 11th century, like, Middle East. A guide to, like, how to get into these parties, right?
Have you read an article about that on medievalist.net?
I did. It's one of my, like, I use, like, kind of bits from the actual source, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful book of, like, little schemes to get yourself in, tricks, you know, just to get into that door, right? Medieval people knew, like, they enjoyed a good party, a good meal.
Oh, absolutely. You know?
And let's gather up a bunch of people, and we're going to tell stories and while away the night. So that's my party.
I think it would be a great party, and I'm glad that we came up with this idea. Thank you, Anthony Caldelis, for the inspiration. But speaking of articles and food, so you have that article on party crashing on medievalist.net, and I think you just posted recently that there is a new course going that teaches people how to make medieval food. Have I got that right?
That's right. That's right. From the good people at Eat Medieval. I believe it's like the 4-day online course, but you actually go ahead and you prepare like foods. This is Meals for a King, and I believe they're mostly based on the Forme de Curry. And so, yeah, like this is their fourth class that they've created. And from all I've heard, it's been really, really well attended, and people love it. So, yeah, we have a bit of news on that. We have a bit of news on the Getty reopening. Yay. So, yay. Although I've never been there, I live vicariously through their news items. And also, like this week on the site, Ken Monshine, he's kind of taking a look at how people work and time and being at home and how all this kind of changed because of COVID, the year of COVID. And will it be like the Middle Ages where, you know, they had this kind of interesting view of when it is to work and when are you supposed to be working from home, things like that. So he looks at that. So we've got that on the website this week.
That sounds good. Ken's articles are always interesting. So that'll be good. I have a little bit of news. I should thank everybody because I was actually cruising Amazon looking for something else. And I found out that my book, Life in Medieval Europe, Fact and Fiction, is number one on Kindle for European medieval history and questions and answers. So Thank you, everybody who's been reading this book on Kindle and making it number one. I'm so pleased.
Yay! Congratulations. And we were talking like that, you know, the book's been out for like a couple of years. So people are finding it and falling in love with it. So as I think we all knew it would.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was a labor of love. And I enjoyed writing that book. I enjoyed coming up with the structure for it and finding out what questions I thought people would want answered. So I'm very happy to see it at the top of the list. European medieval history, that of course is my jam. That makes me so happy. But then to see it at the top of the list for questions and answers, you know,
that's
great too. I guess of people who want their questions answered are into the Middle Ages too.
Yeah, the answer to all questions happens in the Middle Ages.
That's true. I don't know if all of the answers to the secrets of life are in that book, but I really do appreciate everyone reading it. So thank you so much, Kindle readers, for putting it at number one. Yay! Thank you, Peter.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to the interviews you've got lined up in the next few weeks.
They're going
to
be awesome. Stay tuned. Thank you to all of our patrons on patreon.com for supporting the Medieval Podcast, even or maybe especially when it's at its silliest. It's your support that makes this podcast possible, so you always have my thanks. Patrons can choose from all sorts of great stuff like subscriptions to Medieval Warfare Magazine and the Medieval Magazine, membership in our book club, and our amazing maps by Tina Ross. To find out how to become a patron of the Medieval Podcast, please visit patreon.com/medievalists. For everything from time travel to trebuchets, follow medievalist.net on Facebook or Twitter at medievalist. You can find me, Danielle Cebulski, on social media at 5MIN Medievalist or 5 Minute Medievalist. And you can find my books, including pre-ordering the new book I mentioned, How to Live Like a Monk, Medieval Wisdom for Modern Life, at your favorite online bookstores. Our music is Beyond the Warriors by Geefrog. Thanks for listening, and have yourself a wonderful day.